everybody, and welcome back to another installment of A&A MMA. It's your boy, Monty, back at him, back alone. I'm fucking like Macaulay Culkin at this point, fucking home alone. This dude, Slim, does not give a fuck about showing up anymore, but good on him. Actually, he tried. He was at his girl's house and didn't have his equipment or whatever. I'm giving him the pass this time, but next time, Slim, I'm on your neck, you little fucking twerp. But we're back, you guys. Got some news, got some fights to go over last week that were really exciting. And then, of course, I will be previewing the card that is UFC 270, first pay-per-view of the year. The heavyweight championship's on the line. The flyweight championship is on the line. So we got a big night coming up tomorrow, or today if you're listening to this. So let's go ahead and get into a little bit of MMA news. Gunny Nelson just signed a new deal with the UFC, so he should be coming back here pretty soon. Also, I'm really excited about this one. Michael Venom Page at Bellator London, he will be taking on the champ, Amosov. So I'm really, really looking forward to that one. My favorite fighter of all time, Michael Venom Page, getting another shot at the title against one of the best unbeaten records we've seen since Khabib. So really excited about that one. Let's see what else we have here. Apparently this Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz thing's getting pretty for real. Dana's talking about it. Both of the fighters are just saying, you know, let's get the contract signed. So I am hoping and praying that that fight is made, because it makes so much sense for both guys. And, I mean, who doesn't want to see Dustin Poirier versus Nate Diaz? I mean, that will sell tickets like there is no other. So I'm excited to see what goes on with that one. just other than that, I guess a lot of fight announcements, so I'll go ahead and get into those right now. Starting with this one, he's back. I don't know who wanted him back, but he is. Mike Jackson. Yes, that Mike Jackson is back. He will be taking on Dean Barry. That is at UFC, or that's just going to be at a UFC event on April 23rd. So I don't know. I don't know how that happened. I don't know why that's happening, but that fight was made. So we'll see what comes of it. Already got the Yaroslav Amosov and Michael Venom Page fight covered. What else do we got? I wish fucking Slim was here so I could bullshit. All right, this one's going to be fun in Bellator. Dalton Rosto, one of the biggest prospects coming out of Bellator, 5-0 right now. He will be taking on Dwayne Johnson, who has a 6-2 record. That will be at Bellator 273, and that is on January 29th. So I think that'll be on a card next week. So Romero Cotton is out of that fight. In steps Dwayne Johnson. Rafa Garcia will be taking on Jesse Ronson. That's going to be at a UFC event on April 16th. Sorry. So good to see Rafa Garcia getting back and getting a pretty winnable fight there against Jesse Ronson. Miguel Baeza will be taking on Diego Lima. That will be on April 16th as well. That is going to be an absolute banger. Can't wait to see the striking out of both of those guys. Really, really looking forward to that one. Let's see what else we got here. I don't know, man. Apparently, I know this, I should have talked about this in the fight news, but it seems like Kayla Harrison going back to the PFL, man. I can't believe the missed opportunities from both the UFC and Bellator. I guess it does kind of make sense, just because it's so hard for both of those promotions to find fights at 145 pounds. Obviously, you have Amanda Nunes, you have Megan Anderson in the UFC, you got Cyborg over in Bellator, but those are only a couple fights. I mean, she probably needs a fight or two before she does get a title shot. So maybe they're just looking to fill that division out a little bit more over the course of this year, but I don't know. We'll see. If we start seeing a lot of signings coming out of the UFC and Bellator in that specific division, I think that might be signaling that they're going to make a run at Kayla Harrison, but looks like another year of her going to PFL. We'll see if somebody can pull the upset, but I'm thinking Kayla Harrison's going to be getting herself another Millie and another championship in the PFL. This is going to be a great fight. Pat Sabatini taking on Gavin Tucker. That's going to be at UFC 273 on April 9th. That is going to be a fight of the night candidate. I can tell you that right now. This fight just got rebooked for UFC 272. It was supposed to be this weekend at UFC 270, but Sergey Spivak and Greg Hardy will be seeing that at 272. Also, I really hope you guys saw that video that Tai Tuivasa put out of him and Greg Hardy. Oh my gosh, it's pure gold. If you haven't visited any of Tai Tuivasa's social medias, please go do that and look at that video. Hilarious. Whoever edited that, kudos. That shit was hilarious. Super excited about this one. This is going to be an absolute banger. He was a Prospect of the Year candidate. We're going to see his second fight in the UFC. It's Ian Garry taking on Darian Weeks. That's at UFC 273. They're really starting to stack that card up. Another pay-per-view announcement, Nikolai Nogueira-Moreno will be taking on Igor Poteria at UFC 272. Poteria, one of the biggest shining spots of last year's contender series. So getting a pretty good shot here at UFC 272 against Nogueira-Moreno. That's going to be a really fun fight. This is going to be a striking battle the entire time. I don't think this one hits the ground at all. Khalil Roundtree Jr. taking on Carl Robertson at UFC. It's at a UFC event on March 12th. I think that's UFC Vegas 50. So that will be a good one there. The fight between Marco Madsen and Vince Fromhell Pichel has been pushed back from UFC 271 to now UFC 273. So just another addition to that 273 card. Gina Mazzani will be taking on Shanna Young at UFC Vegas. That's going to be like 50, somewhere in the 50s, but that's on April 30th. What else we got here? I got to be getting towards the end. Holy shit, I feel like I've already announced so many fights. All right, so a lot of moving parts here in this one. Of course, there's the UFC London card that's coming up pretty soon. Well, Tom Aspinall is out of his fight with Shamil Abdurakhimov, who will now be facing Sergey Pavlovich. But Tom Aspinall will now be fighting Alexander Volkov at that UFC London card. So, I mean, a huge step there for Tom Aspinall. And if he can get past Volkov, he's already starting to enter himself into title contention. So a quick rise from Tom Aspinall and getting a huge shot there in front of his in front of the London crowd. They're going to be behind him. That is going to be an unbelievable event to watch right there. Another one here. The baddie is back. It's Paddy Pimblett. He will be taking on Kazula Vargas. That is going to be also at UFC London on March 19th. Of course, we're hearing that Paddy was going to be fighting Jared Gordon. I guess it never got done, and Kazula Vargas will be the opponent. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. Rodolfo Vieira is out of his fight this weekend. Unfortunate, because we saw him make some good improvements in his last fight, but we're going to have to wait a little bit longer until we see our guy, Rodolfo Vieira. I am so excited to announce that Chris Barnett is back. He will be taking on another Contender Series alum. They're just getting fights pushed out left and right here. It'll be Martin Boudet. That is on April 16th. Everybody loves Chris Barnett, so we'll see what he brings to the Octagon on that night. This one's probably the worst news of the week. Ilia Topuria is out for his fight tomorrow against Charles Jourdain. That was going to be a possible fight of the night right there, but for medical reasons, Ilia Topuria is out of his fight tomorrow at UFC 270. We'll have Neil Magny taking on Max Griffin. Me and the boy Slim will be watching that live and in person at UFC Columbus on March 26th. So they keep putting some really good fights on that card, man. I think that's going to end up being a great one. I think that might... Oh, here we go. Got another one. Jeremiah Wells will be taking on Mike the Blood Diamond Mathita. So that is going to be a really interesting fight. Everybody keeps saying that Mathita is one of these shining prospects, but from what I've seen from Jeremiah Wells, that is not going to be an easy debut there for Mathita. And that is all I got for MMA news, you guys. Let's go ahead and get into the fight card that happened last week. That was UFC on ESPN, Cater versus Chikadze. Of course, for a little bit, I was using the UFC Vegas 46 hashtag. I got to apologize that I did so bad running the Twitter last week. I was actually in a big poker tournament, and I started doing it, and then I just ended up getting so sidetracked that I couldn't keep up with both things. So my apologies, you guys. I promise tomorrow, today, I will be so on getting these tweets off for you guys. So please bear with me and take my apology. One second. I need to wet the whistle. All right. First fight of the night. It took place in the 155-pound lightweight division. It was TJ Brown taking on Charles Rosa. TJ Brown, man, showing some really, really good grappling. We know that Charles Rosa, one of my big knocks that I always have said about Charles Rosa is he gets a little bit too stagnant when he's on the ground. And, I mean, it continues to show because it was just a lot of TJ Brown using good control. He just really stifled the entire offensive game of Charles Rosa and kind of just cruised himself to a victory. So good stuff from TJ Brown. I personally think that was probably his best performance yet in the UFC, showing the complete skill set against a guy as well-rounded as Charles Rosa, who has a lot of experience in the UFC. Definitely got to give credit where credit is due. TJ Brown defeats Charles Rosa via unanimous decision. The judges had that 29-28, 29-28, 29-28, all in favor of TJ Brown. He improves his overall record now to 16-8, while Charles Rosa falls to 14-7. I got to get another page up, guys. Give me one second here. All right, you guys, sorry about that. Well, the website I usually use to get my information for the post-event facts didn't do it this week, so I don't got any stuff for you guys this week. I'll just have their the results and their records, so sorry about that. All right, let's go ahead and get into this next one. In the 145-pound division, it was Brian Kelleher taking on Kevin Kroom. I was so sure about this fight, and I mean, it pretty much played out exactly how I thought it was going to. Brian Kelleher, just too skilled in the striking and grappling department for Kevin Kroom. Kroom did have a good round in there, but this one was all Brian Kelleher, man. The judges did have it 30-27, 30-27, 29-28 in favor of Brian Kelleher. He improves his overall record now to 24-12. Kevin Kroom falls to 21-14. We'll see. Kelleher, of course, he's kind of like that litmus test for the prospects that are coming up. So I'm sure Kelleher is going to be getting another a big fight here pretty soon. He's just seems like he's always in there, in contention with these guys that are got the name power. So let's go ahead and move on to this next one taking place in the 170-pound division, welterweight division, that is. It was Ramiz Brahimi taking on Court McGee. I was fool enough to think that Brahimi had too many skills on the ground and too much power on the feet for Court McGee. But I told you guys last week, Court McGee is just one of those guys. He's super hard to bet against. Every time he fights, you know that it's going to be a tough fight. And he went out there and just kind of showed that work rate. And really, Ramiz Brahimi wasn't able to hang with the pace of Court McGee. And Court McGee, man, just continues to do it. It's like he just ages like fine wine. And Court McGee improves his overall record to 21-10. Ramiz Brahimi falls to 9-4. Forgot the judge's scorecards. That was a unanimous decision victory for Court McGee. 30-27s all across the board. All right. This was the featured preliminary card bout in the middleweight division. It was Joseph Ugly Man Holmes taking on Jamie Pickett. So this was another one where it was kind of like the last fight. I thought Holmes was going to be too much of a submission threat, too much power on the feet. But I told you guys last week, man, Jamie Pickett does a really good job when he stays on the outside, uses his length, and really the entire fight, except I think it was like the second round, Pickett just did an awesome job with keeping his distance, not letting Holmes get too close, really just wore Holmes down. By the end of the fight, he was really, really tired. And Jamie Pickett, man, I think that's two in a row for him now at this point. So he's starting to kind of put everything together. And with two wins in a row over Holmes and Laureano Staropoli, I mean, I think this is the best we've seen of Jamie Pickett so far in his UFC career. So hopefully he can keep building on that. He is a fun fighter to watch. And he gets that victory over Joseph Holmes. All three judges had these scorecards 29-28 in favor of the winner, Jamie Pickett, who is now 13-6, while Joseph Holmes falls to 7-2. Okay, six-fight main card. Let's go ahead and get into this one. Starting in the featherweight division and the parlay buster. I'm sorry, you guys. We tried going big last week with Monty's bulletproof parlay of the day, and this was the one that ruined it. We got Brian Kelleher. We got Caitlin Chookagian by decision. We got the over in the Cater and Chikadze fight. But, man, Joe Anderson Brito was the one who broke it. And I was so excited about Brito coming in. So that was a really, really tough pill for me to swallow, because I feel like I kind of doubled down with putting him on the parlay and talking about how he's such an amazing prospect and kind of got shit on in that one. But we do need to give credit to Bill Algeo. We knew that wasn't going to be an easy fight for Brito. Algeo has, I think he's had four fights in the UFC, and every single one of them has been against good competition. So this guy really, really starting to build the credentials and the experience needed in the UFC to, you know, be a legitimate featherweight. So Bill Algeo goes out there and defeats Joe Anderson Brito via unanimous decision. The judges had it 30-27, 29-28, 29-28, all in favor of the winner, Bill Algeo, who improves his record now to 15-6, while Joe Anderson Brito falls to 12-3 after his UFC debut. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the lightweight division. The shining spot of this card, and I am not afraid to say that it was our guy, Slava Claus, Vyacheslav Borshev, taking on Dakota Bush. I told you guys, man, we got to watch out for Bush. He has, you know, the good grappling. He's got a great work rate, always doing something. Well, early on, he was kind of, you know, putting that pressure on Borshev. Borshev was able to get up, which last week I told you guys, I'm worried that if Bush gets the fight to the ground, that Borshev's not going to be able to get up. Well, he was able to. The striking ensued, and Slava Claus does it again. Landed an absolutely beautiful punch to the body and dropped Dakota Bush. Hit him right in his liver. Absolutely amazing left hook. And Slava Claus continues to roll, gets that debut victory, and this guy is going to be a star, man. Everybody loves watching Slava Claus. So, Vyacheslav Borshev defeats Dakota Bush via TKO due to a punch to the body. That was 3 minutes and 47 seconds into the very first round. Slava Claus improves his overall record to 6-1. Dakota Bush falls to 8-4. The first fight of the night, or I'm sorry, performance of the night bonus goes to Vyacheslav Borshev. Let's go ahead and get into this next one in the women's flyweight division. It went exactly how we told you guys it would. It was a rematch between Caitlin Chookagian versus Jennifer Maya. We told you guys Chookagian was going to keep this one standing, use volume striking, and that's how she was going to win a decision victory. It was exactly what happened. For our records not being too good on this card, me and Slim got some fight predictions pretty spot on in this one. So Caitlin Chookagian defeats Jennifer Maya via unanimous decision. 30-27s across the board. Caitlin Chookagian improves her overall record to 17-4. Jennifer Maya now 19-8. I'm sure Chookagian will end up getting a title shot here at some point soon. Again, like she always does. So let's move to our only disagreement of the night, and it was the only split decision of the night. It was Brandon Royval taking on Rogerio Bontorin. This was an extremely close fight, as the judges' scorecards indicate. But Royval just did a little bit of enough to get this victory. I personally had it 29-28. I'm sure Slim probably had it the other way. I know he wasn't too happy about the split decision, but I did agree with it. Brandon Royval defeats Rogerio Bontorin via split decision, 29-28, 29-28. One judge had it 29-28 in favor of Bontorin. Brandon Royval improves his overall record now to 13-6. Rogerio Bontorin falls to 17-4. All right, co-main event of the nighttime in the heavyweight division. I told you guys, I think this one's going to be a stinker. I think it's going to go decision, blah, 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 blah. Wrong. Jake Collier went out here and submitted Chase Sherman with a rear naked choke only 2 minutes and 26 seconds into the very first round. If you predicted that, you're lying. Okay. Jake Collier, though, hey, I don't know. Maybe he can be a successful heavyweight. But this man has alternated wins and losses since 2014. Win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. So, I mean, he's got to be due for a loss his next time out. We'll see who he gets matched up with. But this was one of the better Jake Collier performances we've seen so far in the UFC. And Chase Sherman might be back on his way out. Nonetheless, Jake Collier defeats Chase Sherman via submission due to a rear naked choke 2 minutes and 26 seconds into the very first round. Jake Collier gets the second performance of the night bonus, and he improves his overall record now to 13-6, while Chase Sherman falls to 15-9. Let's go ahead and get into this main event of the evening. You knew it had to be fireworks. It was Calvin Kattar taking on Giga Chikadze. We knew we were going to see a lot of striking, but oh my gosh, I was not expecting the absolute war that we got between these two guys. I knew it was going to be a great fight, but we had a war, an absolute battle of attrition between these two guys. And Calvin Kattar, what I say last week, my favorite underdog bet of the night was Calvin Kattar. I don't know why people were sleeping on... Don't get me wrong, I still pick Chikadze. But Calvin Kattar, I don't understand why people were sleeping on him that hard to where he was a 2-1 underdog. Didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And you bet your little ass I fucking put some money on Calvin Kattar, okay? But, I mean, the boxing was just so on point, dude. He had an answer to everything that Chikadze was throwing back his way. And in my personal opinion, I don't think Kattar lost one round. The judges had it that way. I know mostly everybody else who I saw on Twitter also had it 50-45. All in favor of Calvin Kattar. An absolutely dominant performance from a guy that it seemed like nobody really wanted to fight in that featherweight division. Like he was kind of going to cruise his way towards a title shot. He was already getting talked about it. And hey, we'll see what happens with Volkanovski and the Korean Zombie, but I'll tell you what, Giga Chikadze and the Korean Zombie seem to kind of be on a crash course with each other with the amount of shit they're talking about each other. But Calvin Kattar, keeping himself right there in the title contention talks, with a performance like this, I don't know how you don't have him in the top five, top three. Right now, he's currently ranked number five. And, you know, just a couple wins away from getting a title shot, in my personal opinion. So, Calvin Kattar defeats Giga Chikadze via unanimous decision. 50-45, 50-45, 50-44 on the judges' scorecards. This fight got fight of the night. So $50,000 bonuses to both Calvin Kattar and Giga Chikadze on top of the ones won by Jake Collier and Vyacheslav Borshev. That was your UFC Vegas 46 review right there. Again, I got to apologize for that Monty's Bulletproof Parlay of the Day. I shouldn't have put Brie 2 on it and we would have won. But that's all right. We're going to make up for it this weekend. I got something good for you guys cooked up here. So let's go ahead and look at me and Slim's records on the night. I went 6-4. Slim went 5-5. So got me a nice little lead, one fight lead going into the second card of the year. And I'll tell you guys what, Slim wasn't too happy about it last week, watching himself go down again. But hey, these are things he'll learn eventually. All right, guys, I'm going to take a quick break. And when I come back, I will be talking about just an absolute mammoth of a card, UFC 270. Let me see real quick if I got any others to talk about with that. I don't think I do, but I just want to double check. Yep, nope, that's the only big card going on this weekend. So I will be right back, you guys. Hopefully Slim puts a little bit of music or something in here at this point, but if he doesn't, give me a quick pause. This card absolutely stacked up. We did lose a couple that I mentioned earlier. I was really looking forward to the first off the Ilia Topuria and Movsar Evloev fight, but once that dropped off, I was really excited for the Ilia Topuria and Charles Jourdain fight. That's off. Of course, the Rodolfo Vieira and Wellington Turman fight, that's off. We were also supposed to have Greg Hardy and Spivak on this one. I told you guys that got moved to a later date, so a lot of moving parts here in the last couple days. It's probably a good thing me and Slim didn't record yesterday due to the two fights that dropped off today. Kind of saved some time from talking about them. And yeah, so without further ado, my friends, we're back with UFC 270. First pay-per-view of the year. Two titles on the line. It's going to be a late night. I'm looking forward to talking to you guys on Twitter. Of course, I'll be using the hashtag 270 hashtag there on Twitter. So make sure you guys follow us on Twitter at A&A_MMA. That's the letter A, the word and, the letter A underscore MMA. Make sure you guys give us a follow. All right, guys, let's go ahead and get into this fight card with our first fight of the night, starting in the women's 125-pound flyweight division. We have Canada's Jasmine Jasutavicius taking on Kay Hansen. We're going to go ahead and start with the Canadian, Jasmine Jasutavicius, coming in with a 6-1 record. 32 years old, she is 5'7" with a 68-inch reach. Last time we saw her was in her Contender Series fight where she took on Julia Pilastri. She ended up getting a unanimous decision victory in there. Her only career loss right now is to Elise Reed. That was back in 2020, and that was a split decision loss. So other than that, she's looked good. She's got wins over Gabriella Golfin as well. A lot of her wins have come by stoppage. She's got a knockout due to knees, a knockout due to body shots, and a rear naked choke win. So she definitely has some finishing ability in her arsenal. But when you watch her fight, she does have a really good amount of pressure on the feet, but she's not really that crisp of a striker, to put it like in a nice way. But the thing that she does make up for with her lack of technical striking skills is that forward moving pressure that she uses with her striking. Now, she does have some really good wrestling credentials, but honestly, I just don't think she wants to go to the ground with Kay Hansen. We've seen before that when Kay Hansen is fighting, she's very rinse and repeat with her grappling. So I think it'd be in Jasmine Jasutavicius's best interest for her to use her big length advantage. She's going to have a big height advantage and a 5-inch reach advantage. So I think she really needs to take advantage of that against Kay Hansen. Sorry, guys, this dude Spyro will not stop me on. All right, let's go ahead and get into Kay Hansen. Coming in with a record of 7-4, she is only 22 years old. I mentioned pretty big height and reach disadvantage here. She's only 5'2" with a 63-inch reach. Got to take a drag off the joy. I'm sorry, guys. Her last time out, in her second trip to the UFC Octagon, she lost to Corey McKenna. That was back in 2020. So we haven't seen her in more than a year now. She lost that one via unanimous decision. And then before that, she beat Jin Yu Frey in her UFC debut, where she got her in a triangle armbar. But she was losing that fight throughout the first and second round, I believe, of that fight. She did come back there in the third round. So the key here for Kay Hansen will definitely be her grappling. I think she's going to... She's also not too refined as a striker. I think she probably does have the better boxing ability, though. She's just not a strike-first fighter. She prefers to get the fight to the ground, and that's where she does do her best work. She's got a great ground-and-pound game that she can put together, but she also really has good submission. So I think once this fight does hit the ground, we're going to see a big advantage for Kay Hansen. I think it'd just be in Jasmine Jasutavicius's best interest. Use that length, use that size advantage, and really, really try and stay on that outside and stuff any takedowns that are coming from Kay Hansen, because Kay Hansen's got a lot of distance she's going to have to cover to get those takedowns for Jasmine Jasutavicius. As for the pick, though, I do think she closes that distance. I think she gets this fight to the ground. Both me and Slim going with Kay Hansen in this one. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our next bout. In the 115-pound women's strawweight division, we have Ohio's own Vanessa Demopoulos taking on Silvana Gomez-Juarez. We'll start with the hometown Ohio girl. Vanessa Demopoulos, little monster, coming in with a record of 6-4, 33 years old, 5'2" with a 62-inch reach, coming out of Columbus, Ohio. She's been doing a lot of grappling. She just competed twice in Medusa 1, and she went 1-1 in that one, but doing some grappling in her spare time. So you like to see that from Vanessa Demopoulos. You know, she is a multiple time world champion Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. In her UFC debut, though, she fought JJ Aldrich, who we know has really good boxing ability, and she came up significantly short in that one. It was a pretty dominant victory for JJ Aldrich there. She's also had fights against Lupita Godinez, which she lost that one, and Corey McKenna, who she also lost to. But she has some pretty impressive wins on her record. She's beaten Loveth Young. She beat Sam Hughes and Cynthia Arceo. So some good wins on her record. Really trying to cement herself, though, and get that first UFC victory. In her way is the Argentinian Silvana Gomez-Juarez, coming in with a record of 10-3. 37 years old, 5'3" with a 63-inch reach. She lost her last time out to a common opponent between these two, Lupita Godinez. And it was only one round long, but it was just rinse and repeat, takedown after takedown for Lupita Godinez. And really, Silvana Gomez-Juarez just didn't have any type of answer for the grappling of Lupita Godinez in that one. Outside of the UFC, she took a loss to Ariane Lipsky and Poliana Botelho, but she's beaten Vanessa Mello, who, you know, that win keeps getting better and better. So I think this one, Gomez-Juarez is going to have a striking advantage, a power advantage on the feet for sure, but will she be able to stop the grappling of Vanessa Demopoulos? Don't get me wrong, I don't think Demopoulos has the wrestling ability of Lupita Godinez, but I do think when it comes to like pure grappling, Demopoulos is going to have a pretty significant grappling advantage here in this fight. So I think it's just a matter of if she's able to get it to the ground. If she's not, I think she will have a possibility of using enough volume to win on the feet. I just don't think that's where she wants this one to be at all. So, you know, with the ability to at least have volume on the feet and a significant grappling advantage, I got to go with Vanessa Demopoulos in this one. Slim going the opposite way. He is going with Silvana Gomez-Juarez. So a disagreement here from A&A MMA. I'm going with the minus 140 favorite, Vanessa Demopoulos. Slim going with the plus 120, Silvana Gomez-Juarez. Let's go ahead and move on to this next one. Taking place in the 155-pound lightweight division, it's the steamroller Matt Frivola taking on the debuting Mexican fighter Genaro Valdez. Let's go ahead and start with the steamroller Frivola. We've seen him before. 8-3-1, 31 years old, 5'9" with a 71-inch reach, coming out of Huntington, New York. He is currently on a two-fight losing streak. Two fights ago, he lost to Arman Saryukin. We know Saryukin's a top 15 fighter, so you really can't be knocking Frivola too much for that loss. But his other loss came to Terrence McKinney, and it's not the fact that he lost to Terrence McKinney. It's the fact that he got knocked out in 7 seconds by Terrence McKinney, which that's just worrying, you know, seeing a guy get knocked out that quick. But you got to give credit to McKinney. It was a beautifully placed straight punch, and he put Frivola down. Stuff happens. Other than that, though, he has really good wins over Luis Pena and Jalen Turner. He's got a unanimous decision draw against Lando Venata, and then his first time there in the UFC, he was knocked out in a minute against Polo Reyes. So I think with seeing he's been knocked out in a minute and in 7 seconds in the UFC so far, in like the cons of his pros and cons, you got to talk about the chin, man. If he gets hit good, there's a chance that Frivola goes down. Now, what are the good things about Matt Frivola? Well, he's got good offensive wrestling. He's got a good work rate, and he does have some power in his hands. I just think it'd be very beneficial for his game plan to be fully revolved around grappling in this one. I don't think he wants to strike with Valdez, who gets pretty wild, but does have some serious power in his hands because he throws with everything he has every time he throws. So I think the further this fight does go, Matt Frivola is going to have a cardio advantage, and that wrestling is going to be an advantage as well. So let's go ahead and talk about his opponent, Genaro Valdez, El Rayadito, 10-0. He is coming in 30 years old, 5'10", with a 71-inch reach. Born in Mexico, he is undefeated, like I said, 10-0. We last saw him in his Contender Series fight against Patrick White, where in the first round, he was having some trouble. He even ended up looking tired there. But in that second round, he pulled it together when he came off the stool, ended up knocking out Patrick White in 44 seconds in that second round. So this guy, in his last five fights, round three, TKO, round one, submission, round one, TKO, round one, submission, round two, knockout. This guy is a finisher. Every single one of his fights has ended by way of finish. He's going to be going for it all, but is that going to be what hurts him? When you watch Valdez fight, it's just consistent forward, 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 throwing everything he has. There's no time off. Like, he is always looking to do something, always looking for that fight-ending moment. But is that what's going to get him in trouble in that in this fight? I think it is, because when he's coming forward and striking so much, that does leave him very susceptible to the takedown. We saw Patrick White get takedowns on him. And I think once he starts, like, really opening up that game, unless he clips Frivola, I think he could be in some trouble here, because he gets a little bit too overzealous with that striking, and that is might lead to him leaving those hips open, giving Frivola that distance that he already needed to close. And, you know, if Frivola does end up getting this fight to the ground, I think he's going to have the ability to use a lot of time riding out the clock and just racking up control time. So for that reason, I'm going with Matt Frivola in this one. Another disagreement here, because Slim is going with Valdez. Right now, the odds makers have it Matt Frivola at minus 200 and Gennaro Valdez at plus 170. So two straight disagreements here from the A&A MMA boys. Let's go ahead and get into our next matchup here, which will be taking place in the 135-pound bantamweight division. We have Tony Gravely taking on Brazil's Simon Oliveira. Let's go ahead and start with the American. Tony Gravely coming in with a record of 21-7, 30 years old, 5'5" with a 69-inch reach. So last time out, I was not expecting it, but he got a little bit too overconfident, ended up getting hit with a counter hook and knocked out by Nate Maness. Before that, he beat Anthony Burchak, who's a good grappler. He beat Geraldo DeFreitas, who's also a good grappler. And then in his debut, he lost to Brett Johns. So kind of a mixed bag so far from Tony Gravely. But man, this dude really does have some serious talent. Unbelievable grappling ability. His wrestling is fantastic. Once he does get on top of you, he has unbelievable ground and pound. Some of the best in the division. And he's got good submissions as well. I don't think his offense is the problem at all. I think it's his defense that gets him in trouble sometimes, like we saw in the Nate Maness fight, where he kind of left himself susceptible and got hit with a counter hook. In the Brett Johns fight, he ended up getting submitted. Hey, Brett Johns is a great grappler. Things happen. Let's look at his opponent here. It's Simon Oliveira making his UFC debut, coming off the Contender Series. He is 18-3, the Brazilian, 30 years old, 5'6" with a 67-inch reach. If you guys hear a dog crying, I apologize. My cat and Natalie's dog don't get along too well. We're working on it. All right. Now, as for Simon Oliveira, currently on a five-fight win streak, been absolutely tearing it up lately. He had four first-round finishes in a row before he got his Contender Series shot against Jose Aldo. That was a back-and-forth fight where, really both guys put really good accounts of themselves in, but it was Simon Oliveira who ended up getting the split decision victory. So, hey, he's the one who gets the shot here on the pay-per-view card against a guy like Tony Gravely. Oliveira, though, good stand-up skills, has the submissions as well. This dude's guillotine choke is unbelievable. He beat, let's see how many of them he has. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... Six guillotines that I can count, at least on Tapology. So that's his go-to move. And against a guy like Tony Gravely, who likes going for the single legs and the double legs, Tony Gravely could easily walk himself right into a guillotine choke, which is Oliveira's favorite submission. So That is something you really got to watch out for if you like putting bets on winning methods. It's either Gravely by decision or Oliveira by submission. But as for the actual bet here, I got to go with Tony Gravely, man. I'm pretty confident about this one. I just think his overall skill set's just going to be a little bit too much for Oliveira. Oliveira struggled to beat Jose Aldo, which is not a knock on Jose Aldo, but I just do think that Tony Gravely's a much better fighter than him. So I think Gravely's going to do enough in this fight to get the wrestling, or use the wrestling to get the fight to the ground, where it's going to be another one of those top control kind of fights there. So my pick here, Tony Gravely. Slim going with Tony Gravely as well. Gravely currently sitting as the minus 250 favorite over the plus 200 Simon Oliveira. All right, guys, a couple more prelim fights for you here. This is probably the prelim I'm most excited for personally. It's Jack Della Maddalena taking on Pete Rodriguez. Let's go ahead and start with Jack Della Maddalena, coming in with a record of 10-2, 25 years old, 5'11", 73-inch reach, fighting out of Australia. So far, so good for our guy. He lost his very first two professional MMA fights. Since then, unblemished. All of them by stoppage, except his contender series fight as well, where he fought a really good fighter in Angelusa, a guy with great striking. And Maddalena really, really showed his boxing ability, man. He almost reminds me of like a Mason Jones, with really good technical boxing skills, and he can mix it up on the ground as well. I mean, this guy has it all, man, but I'm telling you, the pure boxing skills from Jack Della Maddalena, second to none. It's going to be a really big storyline in this fight, because this guy just does such a good job of watching distance between him and his opponent, and the way he puts combinations together is just absolutely fantastic. And that's going to be a key against a guy like Pete Rodriguez. So let's talk about Pete. Only 4-0, 25 years old, 5'9", with a 73-inch reach. All of his fights have taken place in the Icon Fighting Federation, and all of his fights have ended in first-round knockouts, one of them by 10 seconds, one of them in 41 seconds, one in 1 minute and 24, or 1 minute 25. So this guy always looking for this fight-stopping sequence here. His last time out was definitely his most challenging fight so far, where he took on Roberto Pixley. And, I mean, he went out there and got that one done in 2 minutes and 21 seconds. So Pete Rodriguez, when you watch him fight, he's coming forward. He's trying to stop the fight as soon as possible. There's not really any, like, okay, I'm about to sit here and kind of dissect my opponent, get some reads on him. No, Pete Rodriguez isn't looking for reads. He's looking to go in there and knock you out as soon as he can. That's going to be a problem, though, against Jack Della Maddalena, because Maddalena, like I said, fantastic boxing skills. He is a guy who does take some time to digest what his opponent's throwing at him. But it's going to be really big for Della Maddalena to stay very focused throughout this entire fight, because if he loses a moment of focus, Pete Rodriguez has game-changing power, and he can put you on your back with one punch. And that goes for Jack Maddalena. I mean, Pete Rodriguez has fight-ending power, and that's what makes picking this fight so tricky, because I truly do love Jack Della Maddalena, but when you're going against a guy like Pete Rodriguez who can just shut your lights out in 1 second, you're always kind of second-guessing yourself. But overall, I got to say, I'm pretty confident in this one. What I saw from Jack Della Maddalena in that Contender Series fight, I think this guy's going to be a star, man. He's a fun fighter to watch, and a lot of people are really, really high on this guy, me included. So Jack Maddalena is the pick here for both of us. A&A MMA going with Jack Della Maddalena to defeat Pete Rodriguez. Jack Della Maddalena is the biggest favorite on the card currently second biggest favorite on the card currently at minus 335 over the plus 260. Pete Rodriguez. Let's go ahead and get into our featured preliminary card bout here in the bantamweight division. A mainstay for so long in the bantamweight division, the Brazilian Rayoni Barcelos taking on Victor Henry. Barcelos, of course, a guy that's always hovered around that top 15, but really never got that big crack to, you know, ascend himself into that top 10. Got a good challenge his last time out against Tamir Valiyev, and Valiyev just kind of proved to be a little bit too much on the grappling side there for Barcelos. And, I mean, Barcelos, man, just so many bouts or, like, fits of inactivity. He has fought every year since 2018. He took 2017 off, but I mean, this guy, man, like, if I feel like if he would have just like fought three times a year for 2 years, this is a guy who might have hit the top five at some point in his career. Like, Rayoni Barcelos, huge power in his hands, throws very good combinations, and I mean, that grappling is just unbelievable, man. This dude is such a powerhouse in this weight division. Not a lot of people can contend with the strength of Rayoni Barcelos. But the interesting thing here is he's getting a jiu-jitsu ace, La Mangosta, Victor Henry, coming in with a record of 21-5, 34 years old, 5'7", with, I don't got his reach here. But, man, I'm telling you guys, this dude's grappling is just unbelievable. He's got some power in his hands. Two out of his last four fights that he's won, he won by knockout. So it's not just grappling. He does have some good kicks that he throws. He's got some power in his hands. But overall, man, Victor Henry wants to get the fight to the ground because grappling is his bread and butter. He absolutely loves it. This is a guy that fought in Japan for a really long time. He's kind of been all around the world fighting. So, I think this is a really good chance for him. His last time out, he won against Albert Morales, who we saw in the UFC before. So he does have win over UFC caliber fighters outside of the UFC. It's just a matter of will Victor Henry have enough volume and will that power translate into the UFC against a guy like Rayoni Barcelos, who we've seen like for about 4 years now hovering around the top 15. I don't think so. I think Barcelos is a pretty safe pick here. I think Barcelos is going to, you know, pretty much anywhere the fight goes, I think he will have an advantage, except grappling. I do think, like, the pure maybe he'll have a wrestling advantage too, but pure jiu-jitsu, I think him and Victor Henry are kind of, like, right there neck and neck with each other. But biggest favorite on the card, kind of silly to not go with him. I'm going with Rayoni Barcelos in this one, as is Slim. Barcelos minus 510 as the biggest favorite on the card to defeat the plus 375 Victor Henry. So that is your rundown for the prelims there. Let's go ahead and get into the portion of the fights where you're going to have to pay to see it. All right, let's get into it. At 170 pounds in the welterweight division, we have Ecuador's Michael Morales taking on Trevin Giles. We'll start with the veteran here, the problem, Trevin Giles, 14-3, 29 years old, 6 feet tall with a 74-inch reach. Last time out, lost to Dricus du Plessis, who I've said for a while now, I think Dricus du Plessis is going to end up being a star in the UFC. He's got wins in the UFC so far over Roman Dolidze, Bavon Lewis, and James Krause. So those are three fantastic wins there. But then you got losses against guys like Gerald Meerschaert and Zach Cummings. And then his two other fights in the UFC, he beat Antonio Braga Neto and James Bachnovic, who were both outside of the UFC now. So another kind of fighter that, you know, mixed bag, seen a lot of really good things from him. We've seen some bad things from him. Every single one of his fights that he's lost in the UFC, he's lost by way of stoppage. Two of those coming by guillotine choke, and the other one is last time out against du Plessis, who knocked him out with a beautiful right cross. So Trevin Giles, though, fantastic boxing skills, but that's all it is. Like, his striking is just pure boxing skills. This isn't a guy that's gonna, you know, hit you with leg kicks, throw kicks to the body, high kicks. It's just a very punch-based striking game coming from Trevin Giles. As for his opponent, Michael Morales, the Ecuadorian, undefeated so far, 12-0, only 22 years old. 6 feet tall with a 79-inch reach. He's the second fighter to represent Ecuador outside of Marlon Chito Vera, of course. But, you know, you see the 12-0 record, which is great for a guy that's 22 years old. But this is also a guy that was a national wrestling and Muay Thai champion. So he's got multiple championships under different types of combat sports. So it's not like it's just a 12-0 record. Like, this guy's been competing in all types of combat sports his entire career. And so far, nobody's been able to stop him, man. The punching power that Michael Morales brings is just unbelievable. This is a guy that, he's built like a god. I mean, this guy is cut, and he uses his big reach advantage, which he usually has over a lot of guys at 79 inches. He uses that really, really well. He's not a guy that like gets drawn into too many firefights. Like, he is very good at keeping that distance and not letting guys get inside of the pocket too much on him. And I think Michael Morales, his another key in this one, like I said, he's a Muay Thai champion. He's got good leg kicks. Like I said, Giles isn't the guy that's going to be out there throwing the leg kicks. So I think if Morales is the one who has a more kicking-based game in this one, I think he's got a good chance to win. But when it comes to these guys grappling, I do think they're very similar. I mentioned, you know, Morales has the credentials, but we've seen really good takedown defense from Trevin Giles. I think it's going to hold up. I really don't think Morales will be able to get this fight to the ground. And if he does, it's not going to come very easily. I feel like if he does, there's going to be some scrambles involved, and Giles might be able to get himself back to his feet at least. So I think this is one of the tougher fights for me to call personally on this entire card. As for the odds, this is the closest one of them all. So I really personally just say stay away from this one overall. But for my pick, I know he doesn't have the experience. I know he's only 22 years old. Well, the UFC experience. I know he's only 22 years old. But I do think Michael Morales is a guy that could end up being an absolute star in the UFC. So I said that last week about a guy and he lost. So let's not go two for two on that one. But the pick here is Michael Morales. Slim agreeing on that as well. Michael Morales, the smallest favorite on the card at minus 115 over the minus 105, Trevin Giles. All right, guys, let's go ahead and move on to our next fight. This one taking place in the 135-pound bantamweight division. Whoo, this is an interesting one here. We got Cody Stammen coming in 19-4-1, little shit brick house of a man, taking on Saeed Nurmagomedov, who is not related to Khabib. I know there's like 10 fucking Nurmagomedovs, but this is the one that's not related to Khabib. All right, Saeed. Let's start with the Spartan, Cody Stammen, coming in with a record of 19-4-1, 32 years old, 5'6". With a 64.5-inch reach. I mean, this is a guy who worked his way up to being ranked at one point. But last time out, I'd say probably the worst performance we've gotten out of him so far. But Jimmy Rivera is a tough guy to get out of there. So, you know, I'm not going to sit there and knock him like, oh, yeah, it was a terrible performance. It wasn't like that. It was just not the best we've seen from Cody Stammen so far. He's got wins over Brian Kelleher, Alejandro Perez, Brian Caraway, Tom Duquesnoy. What the fuck is he doing? Let me check on that real quick. Oh my God, he hasn't fought since UFC Fight Night 127 in 2018. Oh my God. Why, Tom Duquesnoy? You were supposed to be the fucking man. He's only 28 still too. That's crazy. Wow. All right, sorry about that. And then he beat Tyrion Ware. Okay, so his two losses so far in the UFC, like I mentioned, Jimmy Rivera, not a bad loss. And then he got knee-barred by Aljamain Sterling. Those are two top bantamweights right there. And then he had a draw against Song Yadong, who we know is one of the best prospects in all of MMA. So Cody Stammen, what more can you say other than get the fight to the ground? I mean, this guy is one of the better wrestlers at 135, and that's his game plan through and through. He's going to try getting you to the ground. He's going to try using ground and pound and top control. That's what he does every single fight. He doesn't care what your style is because he's going to be going for his every single time. Now, as for his opponent, Saeed Nurmagomedov, you might hear the name Nurmagomedov and think, oh, this guy's got to be a grappler, right? No, he does have grappling skills. He's more well-rounded than he's like a specialist at either striking or grappling. He's 29 years old, 5'8", with a 70-inch reach. Huge reach advantage here for Saeed in this fight. His last time out, he beat Mark Striegel with a left hook and followed that up with some ground and pound. His lone loss in the UFC coming to Rayoni Barcelos. Can't knock him too much for that one.
Oh,
sorry, guys. It's like 12:30. I'm tired. And then he has wins over Justin Scoggins and Ricardo Hamos, which, you know, a win over Ricardo Hamos is always a good thing on your record. His other loss outside of the UFC was to Magomed Bubulatov. So this guy's been fighting UFC caliber competition for a very long time now. He's got wins over Anderson Dos Santos outside of the UFC as well. So we've seen a lot of good stuff from Saeed Nurmagomedov. Pretty flashy with his kicks. He gets his high kicks up there really, really well. And against like a shorter opponent against a shorter opponent like Cody Stamann, I think that's going to be pretty beneficial for him. I think this is going to be an exciting fight. I think this one could go a lot of different ways. But I think Saeed Nurmagomedov is probably just going to have the better overall skill set here in this fight. So he's going to be my pick here, as is the pick for Slim. ANA MMA, both going with the minus 195 favorite, Saeed Nurmagomedov, to defeat the plus 165 Cody Stamann. But hey, Cody Stamann was a guy that was ranked at one point, and I don't think, putting him on a parlay where you're looking for an underdog would be a bad move at all. So, all right, guys, let's go ahead and get into this last fight of the night that is not for a title in the 170-pound division. It's one of the most exciting fighters you will ever see. If there's a fight you need to watch just for pure excitement purposes, it's this one. It's Michelle Paella taking on newcomer Andre Fiallo, who's finally getting his chance in the UFC. We'll start with Demolidor. Michelle Paella first, though. 26-11 overall, 28 years old, 6'1" with a 73-inch reach. He's won three fights in a row, guys. He beat Nico Price, Chaos Williams, and Zalim Imadaev, which really just shows, like, when he's focused and he's not doing, like, the backflips and the stuff that really does get us excited, he's actually a pretty good technical fighter. Imadaev was supposed to be this good boxer, and he ended up getting choked out. Chaos Williams, he's this guy that knocks you out in the first round. Well, he ended up getting taken three rounds and lost to Paella. And then Nico Price, he had some success there at the end, but the first two rounds were all Michelle Paella. So this is a guy who, when he's like fully focused, don't get me wrong, he's going to put on a show tomorrow. He's going to be dancing. He's going to be showboating. But when he's focused on not doing like the tricky stuff, the cartwheel kicks and the flying stuff off the cage, when he's not doing stuff like that, he is a fantastic fighter. Really, his only two losses in the UFC, which were to Tristan Connolly, that was the most winnable fight I think he's ever had in his career, but he got tired because he was doing silly stuff. At one point, he literally, like, vertically leapt over Tristan Connolly, like, jumped over him. I mean, silly stuff in the cage that's fun to watch, but not good in a combat aspect. And then he lost to Diego Sanchez. That was due to a DQ from an illegal knee. So we've seen some really, really good stuff out of Michelle Paella. Let's talk about his opponent, Andre Fiallo, 14-3, 27 years old, 6 feet tall with a 74-inch reach. This is a guy that a lot of people have been talking about as like one of the better fighters outside of the UFC for a really long time now. His last time out was his most impressive performance, in my opinion, where he beat Stefan Sekulic. That was at UAE Warriors. He had two wins at UAE Warriors before that. And then, of course, we remember that first ex-MMA card where he took on James Vick. He got a victory in that one as well. He has losses outside of the UFC to Antonio Dos Santos Jr. and Chris Curtis. And then he's got a no contest against Glyco Franca and a loss against a loss against Chidi and Jaquani. But this guy, man, for as long as he's been fighting, he's fought good competition. I mean, his third fight, when he was only 3-0 at this point, he took on a guy that was 22-8. Like, no easy fights here for our guy, Andre Fiallo. Now for the skill set. First off, I want to mention he fights at Sanford MMA. If you fight at Sanford MMA, I automatically assume you're probably a pretty good fighter. But Fiallo, man, this guy has awesome boxing. I'm talking like the technical boxing skills are second to none. And I think that might pose a pretty big challenge for Michel Pereira here, because we know, like, Pereira, even when he is, like I talked about, like that focus, not doing the showboat stuff, he's still not the most technical striker. He's kind of like that guy that's going to dart in and hit you with a big punch that you didn't really see coming. It's not going to be like a four-punch combo that he set up and the last punch is the one that's going to put you out. No, that's not Michel Pereira's style. That's more Andre Fiallo's style. This guy has boxing combinations out the wazoo, and he mixes in kicks when he's not being stagnant with them. Like, if he is mixing in the kicks, it's really good. It's not super necessary in his game, but I think in a fight with a guy like Michel Pereira, we are going to have to see some kicks from Andre Fiallo. This is also a guy that has some fantastic grappling skills. I don't know if this one will take place on the ground at all, but if it does, I'm really, really interested to see how that one plays out. But you guys, as for the pick here, I got to go with the guy, Michel Pereira. On a streak with wins over the three guys he's beat in those last three fights, like, I think this guy is just on a tear right now. And I think Andre Fiallo is going to have a very successful UFC career. I think it's going to get off to a rough start, because I think coming in off of, I mean, this dude probably got like a 3-5 at most day notice in this one. So, you know, I don't like coming off the short notice. But as for, like, betting-wise, this guy, Fiallo, is a plus 225 underdog. I got to say, that's my favorite underdog pick of the night, straight up. I'm not putting him on a parlay, and he's not my pick here. But at plus 225, I think Fiallo has the best value of any underdog on this card. But me and Slim both going with Michel Pereira, who is currently sitting as the minus 280 favorite over the plus 225 Andre Fiallo. All right, guys, we got two championship fights to talk about here. This first one for the flyweight championship of the world and the trilogy bout for Brandon Moreno and Davison Figueiredo. Let's start with the champion, the assassin baby, Brandon Moreno. The first ever Mexican-born champion, 19-5-2 overall, 28 years old, 5'7" with a 70-inch reach. His last time out, rear naked choke win over Davison Figueiredo, where in the first round, it looked like Moreno might get a knockout win. He dropped Figueiredo, wasn't able to capitalize on it, but nonetheless won that round. Second round, Figueiredo came out, pulled a little bit of the rally hat, and, you know, I'd say he won that round, and then third round, all Brandon Moreno, and was able to put Davison Figueiredo away. All right, now the first fight, I know it seems like it was pretty long ago, but let me refresh your memories a little bit. Davison Figueiredo would have won if he didn't get the point taken in that fight. So, you know, we could be talking about this fight a lot more different if that point wasn't taken away. But, I mean, Brandon Moreno, look at the absolute tear this man is on right now. Wins over Michael Perez. That was his last fight outside of the UFC. He came back to Askar Askarov. That was a split draw. Askar Askarov's possibly going to get a title shot here. Kai Kara France beat him. Another title contender. Jussie Formiga beat him. Brandon Royval beat him. And then the two fights with Davison Figueiredo. I think right now Brandon Moreno is in his prime. This is the best assassin baby we've ever seen. And I gotta say, going into, if we would have recorded yesterday, I would have been very sure about my pick with Davison Figueiredo. After watching the weigh-ins, I think Brandon Moreno is really, in Davison Figueiredo's head. I really, truly think that. It seems like Figueiredo is kind of doing like, it's like McGregor, where it was like, you already showed you're a good guy. Now you're trying to talk the shit and like, ah, it's not working. It's not working. You already showed you're the good guy. You guys already kind of had like a good relationship and now you're trying to do this and that. It just doesn't feel authentic. And it feels like it's almost like Moreno's really in Figueiredo's head right now. But let's talk about the former champ himself, Dusty Guerra, Davison Figueiredo, 20 wins, 2 losses and 1 draw. 34 years old, 5'5" with a 68-inch reach. Let's talk about some of his wins, okay? He beat Alex Perez, great fighter. 2 wins over Joseph Benavidez, one of the best fighters ever in this division. Wins over Tim Elliott, Alexandre Pantoja, who's the last man to beat Brandon Moreno. He's also got a loss to Juicy A Formiga, but you get my drift here, man. This dude, Davison Figueiredo, very well-rounded, just like Brandon Moreno is. But the thing about Figueiredo is he's got power in his hands. He is the hardest-hitting 125er we've ever seen. His grappling's great. He's got the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, even though he got tapped out last time. The thing that I think really hurt him was his cardio. This is a guy we've seen miss weight before. I think Figueiredo, he looked on the good on the scale yesterday, so that gives me a little bit more of a, you know, thing to think about. But I think Figueiredo, his cardio has left him at times, and Brandon Moreno, he's one of those guys. He's almost like, you guys let me know if this is a bad comparison or not, but the Korean Zombie. Like, Korean Zombie can take a lot of damage and just keep coming forward and has a great cardio set. I think that's really the same thing with Brandon Moreno. The thing that I think really has worried me about this entire fight, I think I'd be all Brandon Moreno if it wasn't for the fact that Davison Figueiredo switched his training camps, went and fought at a Fight Ready MMA with Henry Cejudo, Zhang Wei Li's there, a couple fighters that I just can't think of off the top of my head right now because it's fucking 12:30, but I mean, the switch to that training camp, that could be huge. Like, in that second fight, we saw it was Brandon Moreno who was the one that took, like, these leaps and bounds forward. And both of those fights for the title, Davison Figueiredo was at his own gym. So maybe going and fighting with guys like Henry Cejudo and champions like Zhang Weili, maybe those were the things that Davison Figueiredo needed to do to make those leaps and bounds to beat Brandon Moreno. I'm so torn on this one. This is my least favorite one that I wish I didn't have to pick this one at all, but I got to go for the guy that I feel like I'm going to be cheering for, and I got to go with Brandon Moreno, and Slim's going with him too. A&A MMA agreeing on the first title fight of the night. We're both going with the minus 180 favorite, Brandon Moreno, to defeat the plus 155 Davison Figueiredo. I mentioned a lot of things in that fight, a lot of factors. I hope you guys can kind of pick and choose what matters the most to you out of that. But yeah, A&A MMA going with the champ, man. Which brings us to the conclusion and the first heavyweight championship of the year. It's Francis Ngannou taking on Ciryl Gane. Two former teammates, and they're just is bad blood all over the place. I mean, that press conference was a lot of shit talking, a lot of back and forth. Both guys think they have the one up on the other guy for this reason or that reason. Francis came out and said he knocked out Ciryl with a high kick. Ciryl's like, what are you talking about? It's just been great so far. But let's go ahead and get into it, starting with the champ himself, Cameroon's own, the Predator, Francis Ngannou, coming in with a record of 16-3, 35 years old, 6'4" with an 83-inch reach, currently on a 5-fight win streak since he took that loss to Derek Lewis and Stipe Miocic. All of them by knockout. 1:45 to Curtis Blaydes, 1:26 to Cain Velasquez, 1:11 to Junior Dos Santos, 20 seconds to Jair Ginho, and then it just took 52 seconds in the second round to defeat Stipe last time. You guys want to hear a hot take? I think this fight goes longer than all those other ones combined. Yeah, combined. I said it. I think Francis is going to be in the cage longer in this fight than he's been in his five fights, his five last fights combined. That's how crazy I think this is. Francis, he has the power advantage. Obviously, he's got the hardest punch ever recorded. But Francis, I think the best thing about Francis is since those losses, like he could have taken those losses in 2018 to Stipe and Derek Lewis and, you know, ended up fizzling out. After that Derek Lewis loss, he took a fight against Curtis Blaydes just 4 months later and knocked him out in 45 seconds. And he hasn't looked back since. In that last fight against Stipe, it was only 3 years in between there. Like, and both guys were pretty much, you know, the same, or so we thought coming in. But, and that's why we picked Stipe. We thought the grappling was going to be too much. But we saw Francis was able to stop those takedowns. And hey, in the end, he ended up getting the win. What I don't think Francis can do in this fight is the Derek Lewis thing. I don't think he can sit there and read too much with Ciryl gone, because Ciryl's going to have, I think, the volume in this fight. I think he's going to have the more technical striking ability. And I think Francis will like not be, it won't be beneficial for him to like have stagnant moments. Like I need Francis to be aggressive Francis. And we have seen, you know, Gon's a good counter puncher, but Francis has that game-changing power to where you don't want to stand there and counterpunch against him. You want to move the fuck out of the way. And that's going to be a big thing for Ciryl, because we've seen he's got great lateral movement. He's probably the lightest heavyweight we've ever seen on his feet. And, you know, if Ciryl's able to sit there and dodge those, you know, those strikes, I think Ciryl will have, like, a, the volume ability to win rounds. The longer this fight goes, I think Ciryl's going to have the ability to rack up strike differential, and, you know, that'd be a good way for him to win. But Francis Ngannou is a 25-minute knockout threat, okay? At no point in this fight is Ciryl Gane just safe. It's not like in the fifth round. I don't think Francis will be dead tired or anything like that if it goes that late. I think Francis is going to have the punching power, the clear experience advantage with fighting guys like Curtis Blaydes, Derek Lewis, Cain Velasquez, Stipe twice, Jairzinho. Like, that is experience that Ciryl Gane just hasn't been able to have yet in his UFC run. Like, I mean, yeah, he beat Derek Lewis. Yeah, he beat Alexander Volkov. He beat Jairzinho. He beat Junior Dos Santos. But, like, Stipe twice, that is such a huge thing for Francis. And the fact that he like made the leaps and bounds that he did in between their 3 year separation, that is my biggest like thumbs up thing for Francis. Now let's go to the opponent, Ciryl Gane, the Frenchman, 10-0. Bon Gaman is coming in 31 years old, 6'4" with a 83-inch reach. Fighting out of the former place that Francis got his start, in the MMA Factory. So, undefeated, like I said, currently 7 wins in the UFC. Just came in, started wrecking shit, and, you know, this is a quick ascension to the title. Is it going to be a teacher moment, though, like what Francis had with Stipe, where it's like, okay, yeah, you're this undefeated guy that everybody's, you know, amazed by, and blah, blah, blah. And then you come in and it's like, all right, there's still a couple things you need to work on, young man. I do think the overall complete package for Ciryl is there. This guy has technical striking ability, a plethora of Muay Thai experience. We've seen this guy hit a heel hook in the UFC before. Like, he's got some stuff in his back pocket, but he's not like the power puncher like Francis. Don't get me wrong. He could come in with like a step in elbow, like that elbow we hit Junior Dos Santos with. That was, you know, behind the head or whatever. But, you know, this guy's got a lot of different strikes he can use against Francis. But I don't know, man. Like, just the progress I've seen Francis make as a mixed martial artist, I just think he's truly the champion, man. I think Francis is going to go out when France as the champion when Francis feels like it. I truly think right now he is the best heavyweight in the world. And, you know, if I get proven wrong and Ciryl Gane wins, hey, you know, I got it wrong. But Ciryl Gane, I think he's got the skill set, but I don't know, man. I guess this is the pinnacle of, like, if Ciryl Gane wins this fight, I probably won't ever pick against him ever again. Ever again. So it's going to go two different ways. I think it's going to go either Ciryl Gane by decision or Francis gets a knockout in this one. Those are the only two ways I'm betting this one. So as for the pick, A&A MMA agreeing on both title fights. We're both going with Francis Ngannou to defeat Ciryl Gane in the main event. It's pretty crazy to say, but Francis Ngannou is the underdog right now. Ciryl Gane, the -145 favorite over the +125. Francis Ngannou. So we'll see how it plays out, you guys. But I got a little something else for you here. It's time for Monty's Bulletproof Parlay of the Day. We're going to start off with my guy Tony Gravely over Simon Oliveira. I think Gravely's going to come in, be able to win this one by decision. I would throw that on my, you know, you can bet on winning methods. I would go Tony Gravely by decision, but I'm going to play it safe here. I'm just going to go money line. Let's put Tony Gravely on there as our first leg of the parlay. Our second leg, Jack Della Maddalena at -335. I think Della Maddalena is going to have a great striking advantage in this one. Not a power advantage, but a technical striking ability advantage. We're going with Jack Della Maddalena as our second leg in this one. And then our third and final leg, we are going with, in the co-main event, Brandon Moreno versus Davison Figueiredo, the over. It's 3.5 right now. I think this one goes over. I think we see a decision this time out. That is a three-leg parlay there. We're going Tony Gravely money line, Jack Della Maddalena money line, over 3.5 in the co-main event for Brandon Moreno, Davison Figueiredo. If you were to put $50 on that, you would win $151. So we're putting one unit on that one, and that will at least put us up on the year, you guys. So let's go ahead and do that. Monty's Bulletproof Parlay of the Day. Hammer that this weekend, you guys. Take home some money. Thank me later. Other than that, my friends, that's all I got for you. This was another Dolo podcast where your boy Mont. Shout out to my cat Spyro. I love you, you little stupid asshole. And we'll be seeing you guys next week. Like I said, follow us on Twitter, A&A MMA. That's the letter A, the word and, the letter A underscore MMA. I'll be getting our predictions out, live scorecards, official results, all that good shit, reactions, get it all at A&A MMA. Other than that, my friends, hope you win some money this weekend. Hope you have fun watching the fights with your friends. And if you're doing neither of those, God bless you, my friends. I'll catch you guys later. Peace, y'all.